You're listening to the Shut Up and Teach podcast. I'm your host, Elijah Carbajal. Let's get started. Hey everyone, it's Elijah here. Before we get to the episode, I just wanted to ask you a question. Have you heard? My book has been released. I would be so honored if you would read my book, A Place They Love. Here's how you can purchase the book to read it. It's available on the EduMatch website. It's available on Amazon in three formats, paperback, hardback, and Kindle, and available at Barnes & Noble in paperback and ebook. I hope that you'll check it out. I hope that you'll leave an awesome review. I hope that you'll share it with a friend. Now, let's get to the episode. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Shut Up and Teach podcast. It's your host, Elijah Carbajal, Title I Reading Interventionist out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and the author of A Place They Love, which is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and EduMatch. But enough of that. I want to talk to you about my guest, and I want to talk with my guest today. That's what this episode is all about, not about me. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce my guest, Jamie Johnson. Welcome to the Shut Up and Teach podcast.
Oh, thanks so much, Elijah. My Wi-Fi is starting to cut out a little bit, so I'm hoping this sounds okay as it comes through. But I'm really excited to be here. I'm excited for you about your book, too. It looks like A Place They Love has been getting a lot of positive attention, and so it's fun to meet with a fellow author and share our joys and miseries.
Right. Yeah. No, from coming from another author, that means a lot. So thank you for that little shout out there for the book as well. You have a book out, and we're going to talk about that on the show today. But to start, could you just give our listeners a little bit of background of who you are and what you're all about, what your role in education is?
Yeah. So I'm Jamie Johnson, and I have been a teacher in various roles for the last over 20 years now. Everything from teaching in a third grade bilingual classroom to teaching in Indonesia with the Peace Corps in an English classroom in a madrasa high school. And currently I'm the director of education at a local museum. And yeah, so I've done a lot of different roles as an educator.
That's really impressive. My little connection there, my wife worked as an educator at a museum for, I think it was like 5 years or something like that, out in Houston. So fun little connection there.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that when I saw you guys.
Yeah. Pretty interesting. So thank you for that little bit about yourself. Now let's talk about your book. That's where I was hoping to start. Your book is titled Teach and Still Have Time to Pee. So I found this at Teach Better, like in the bookshop area that they had. I'm like scrolling through, I picked up a couple books, and then I come to yours and I'm like, ooh, interesting title. And then flip it around. I remember the quote on there was, who's this teacher cussing up and down the halls or something like that. And I was like, I have found my people. So I'm glad we were able to connect over that and, you know, through your book. But why don't you give us a description, you know, give us a rundown of what your book is about, maybe the inspiration, the message behind it?
Yeah. The book started out as a personal rant against overwork and overwhelm. And I was working as a life coach, as helping support educators through their overwhelm. And wanted to create a useful tool for people processing through that and learning how to set courageous boundaries and learning to hold on to a sense of worth when other people are, you know, trying to cram them into this box that they don't fit in. And so it started out as a tool, and then it turned into a whole book once I got going with it and kind of took on a life of its own, where I just really wanted to encourage fellow educators to stand up and rebel against systems of overwork and overwhelm that permeate the culture of education and social work and nonprofits and really learn how to stand their ground as far as, you know, the idea that they are worth more than anything in the pile on their desk for that day. Like, none of that is worth your sanity and your health and your happiness. And the more we can stand in that belief and hold those boundaries, the more the stuff in the pile on our desk gets done anyway. So it works out if we're healthier to do even better for the people we love and the jobs we care about and the things we're passionate about.
Nice. Just wondering, because I like when I read through the book, I was getting that, like, man, setting boundaries is like super crucial, especially in a day and age where teacher burnout is kind of running rampant and real, especially after the pandemic. So did mm-hmm. you just, I guess, kind of personal question, you don't have to go into detail or anything if you don't want to, but like, did you ever hit that like stage of burnout and have to like, go, yeah.
Yeah, I hit demoralized is what I hit. And I had been working for 10 years in a place that really didn't understand my fight for equity in my classroom and what I was trying to do for my students. And it was just bogged down with these, you know, status quo protocol like mongers. And they were, on one hand, you know, they would be threatening my job. And I would take that stand and say, well, then fire me, because I know I'm going to do what these kids need. I'm, you know, kids who are suicidal. I don't think it's appropriate to plop down a test right in front of them on that day. And, you know, I wouldn't do the things that I felt were actually harming my students and would be threatened. But then on the other hand, there's another group of people who are seeing the results I'm getting from my students and their parents and, you know, handing awards out. And so it was a really awful place to be, where your job is threatened and people hate you and then other people love you, and you're doing it right, you're doing it wrong. And I really just had to not listen to the people. I reached a point of demoralization where I realized, wow, the system that I am is actually harming kids. And if I continue to be in this system and totally rock it, they're going to keep taking what I'm doing and saying, see, she can do it. See, it's working, and claiming it as their own and claiming that their system is working. And then I'm perpetuating this harmful system. So I knew I had to leave the public school system where I was at. And I joined the Peace Corps. I thought, you know, and I had like a $9,000 pay cut, you know? And so if I'm eventually going to be teaching for free anyway, and working this hard for free, I'm going to go somewhere where people value and appreciate, you know, our experience and our professional education. So I joined the Peace Corps as a mentor English teacher, and it was the hardest thing I've ever done, but it really helped me step back from my own culture, recognize that teachers everywhere in the world, we are all going through this. This is not, people claim, oh, it's in the US, or, oh, it's, you know, just in our, it's not, it's everywhere. And I just decided, yeah, to not be demoralized, to find a way out. I got my life coaching certification to help people kind of with that same demoralization and overwhelm wade through it, you know, like I was wading through it. And educational. I learned all the things I was wanting to learn and didn't understand about setting boundaries through that process. I could articulate them and teach about them better through that process of life coach training and certification.
Good. So that sort of prepared you for where you were kind of going into. I mean, maybe you stumbled upon that by accident, obviously. But all that sort of prepared you for, life coaching and what you're doing now. And that kind of answered one of my questions about obstacles you encountered as a teacher and all that. Were there obstacles you encountered in writing this book? I mean, just like even the title, like, is not necessarily a title that sounds edgy. Like, it does educational, but it's like teaching still have time to pee. So it's not like that professional, quote unquote, title that everyone expects from a book. But I loved it. I'm like, this is my book, this is my people. So did you encounter obstacles when writing that?
I love that you bring that up about the title, and because my business name is also kickassteacher.com, I was really pushing against that box of, teachers, they don't drink or party, they don't swear, and they definitely don't have sex. We're like, we must all adopt our children because we have to be that box that's all clean cut, great for the kids. And so yes, the title was definitely some pushback against that. I want to attract my people like you who have that sense of a little bit of rebellion and adventure in this world and are willing to push back a little bit, or maybe a lot. But the title is a joke and isn't a joke. I was in a doctor's appointment for another bladder infection, and she informed me that teachers and RNs have the highest rate of bladder infections because we don't take time to pee. And when I was speaking at a conference virtually, but it was with teachers in Australia, they mentioned that in Australia they actually call it teacher bladder. And so I thought, one of the most basic forms of self-care, going to the bathroom. We don't even have time or take time to do that in this role. And that is really unhealthy. That feels like a systemic problem that runs so deeply, we even as colleagues convince each other that we're, doing something wrong if we're taking time to pee. So, obstacles with the book, out of 10,000 people who helped vote on the book cover, only two or three actually gave me pushback about the title. And I valued that. It was, if everybody likes something, you're doing something wrong. And I think I say right in the beginning, this book is not for everyone. If you don't feel some sense of doing battle in this job, probably this isn't the book for you. But the obstacles were not so much with pushback against swearing or being a little bit crass, but more writing the content because some of the things in there really enraged me. I was so angry around some of those issues at the time and the injustice of watching colleagues who were quality educators doing amazing things believe the shit that people throw down at them. You're not doing well because you didn't check off these boxes, but maybe they've helped a child who's really struggling with trauma come out of some of that. There's other things, other boxes we're checking off, and I see these incredible people doing incredible things, just becoming burnout and demoralized by that. So lots of anger. So writing the book, the first draft was not super encouraging. It was pretty ranty and angry. And I had a team of like close to 50 people helping me follow through with my theme throughout the book, which is, that you are worth more than the pile on your desk. And keep it encouraging, like shift it to where you can set courageous boundaries and believe in it instead of it just being like ranting about all the times I had to set courageous boundaries and how hard it was. And until I finally trudged through to the, to the successful part of the journey. So I had a lot of times where I didn't want to write it. And I didn't want to sit down and talk about that thing. So I ended up reaching out to one of my old college professors, who I loved. He was one of my English professors, and asked him if we could set up an independent study for a grade. So, like, I had some skin in the game here to get this done on a timeline. I was being graded if I didn't meet my deadlines. And he was my accountability partner. I was paying money for it. Grades are on the line. And I set up, the curriculum, like all the landmark accomplishments I need to have in place to get the book done, because it was hard to talk about these things even to myself. I understood how so many authors, you just kind of want to drown your sorrows after putting some of this down. But I really appreciate the beta readers and my friends and my family and colleagues who gave me feedback throughout and helped me, stay accountable and stay focused and keep it aligning with my goal to be encouraging that, yes, it's hard to set courageous boundaries, but look at how worth it is. Look at what can happen for not only for you, but for the people you care about and the work you're passionate about.
Yeah, I love it. The hook of your book, the title of your book really hooks the readers in, but it's that message of within the chapters of setting courageous boundaries that really is the big takeaway and really is the heart of all of it. So thank you so much for your work with that and for writing it. It impacted me, and I hope our listeners will check it out as well. Shifting gears a little bit, you've kind of been in multiple roles in education and done multiple things. Is there a moment in your career that you were like, man, I was really successful at this time? And then another moment where you're like, oh, I kind of failed in that area. And what did you learn from both of those experiences?
I think as far as success goes, I am a team person. I do forge out ahead on my own at first often, but I really prefer to be in a team. And sometimes it's really hard to get people to want to join your crazy wild ideas. And so one of my favorite ideas, I had researched it and I believed in it and I knew all the dangers and the drawbacks of doing home visits for our students, but I convinced two of my colleagues to do home visits for all of our students every year. And it took a long time of being partners and working together to get to that place where they were willing to invest time in something other than the things that were being shut us, like I definitely wouldn't, I kind of blew off some mandates to make time for this home visit thing because I knew that what the mandates were trying to accomplish, as far as curriculum and things like that, the research was saying this home visit thing was going to accomplish that more quickly. So I was really successful when I had two pretty by the book colleagues jumping in with me on this one. And we would be trudging through the snow together to go visit a house. And we were building these relationships with our families because we were a walking school. We could walk to everybody's, almost every student's house. And then just seeing the shift in the school culture because of it. We were able to do fundraisers for a family going through cancer. We would not have known that if we hadn't gone to their home. Another family, I was able to get a big collection of Christmas ornaments because they were celebrating Christmas for the first time. And just little things like that that I wouldn't know, where I could make these connections, create a shift in culture in our school where we weren't just focused on test scores and student behavior, but like really connecting as a family, as a team, felt super successful. That was the kind of place I wanted to be in, like your book, A Place They Love. That was a good one. And so, yeah, I felt like the third year running on that one, I just felt like we're doing crazy things that people are telling us not to do, and at the same time, loving it and celebrating it and making way for us to do that because they see the value and they saw the academic growth. I mean, the research isn't wrong about building relationships with your students and, the growth, academic growth, when they feel safe at school like that, that you can make. So as far as a failure, and this really does tie in with my book, I feel like it's funny because it's sort of a success and failure at the same time. My very last year of teaching, this school board member created the first ever STEM Teacher of the Year award for our district because of this project I was doing that she loved. But I don't know that she was aware of all the pushback I had the entire time I was doing the project, the constant people in my room yelling at me, people thinking I should be fired, people really making it hard for me to be innovative and follow what I knew was going to be successful for my kids. And so I get up to accept the award, and I'm feeling pretty resentful about it because I'm feeling like, wow, so I get all these results, and now you guys are gonna like celebrate it after the whole year and a half you've been really hard on me and my students. But I did appreciate the person that, I really felt like the person who pushed for the award truly valued every step of the way. And so I imagine she had some pushback as well in creating this. So I get up there to accept the award, and I really wanted to say something about creating more space for innovation and believing in the well-educated professionals that are in front of our students, trusting them, believing that they know their kids and giving them more of that space to do these things. And I didn't say that. I was just totally overwhelmed and just kind of not sure what to do. And I just got up and said thank you. And that has bugged me ever since. So I'm really glad to be able to voice it here on the podcast. Years ago when that was going on, we'll hear this and recognize that people getting those awards, it's not always sunshine and daisies when they're standing up there, and sticking to your guns and knowing, believing in what you're doing and setting those hard boundaries and following through is totally worth it, not because of the recognition, but because of what it does for your students and what it does for your sense of purpose at work. I mean, it's why I was there, was to help these kids grow and develop and accomplish things and feel proud of themselves. And seeing them, get there was kind of my whole reason for doing it. So it's worth the battle. And the people who are, overly clinging to the status quo really need to lighten up because it's not the status quo people that are winning those awards.
I love it. I love it. And it's ultimately it's you are doing things for your kids, and that's ultimately what you say that throughout the book as well. Like, I knew this was best for my kids. You said it multiple times on the show today. I knew this was right for my kids and it was going to help them. So it's not just those folks who are breaking status quo, but it's the folks that are doing it for the kids, and I
I
love that
do
that was
value
your heart.
100% believe. Can I share a quick story about that, Elisha?
Yeah.
The kids are my heart, and I have to be careful about that. Oh, but I'm doing it for the kids, so I'm not going to pee for the kids. I have to really keep in mind that I'm taking care of myself so that I have something left for anybody, whether it's the students or my colleagues or my family.
Absolutely. It's that self-care
Yeah.
for yourself to be better for someone else. But yeah, we can't be there for them if we're not there for ourselves first. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
appreciate that. Okay, so we're gonna get into my last question of the day, which is a three-part question. And so I want to know, Jamie, what are you watching? What are you listening to? And or what are you reading?
Okay. Watching, I actually don't have, I mean, I barely have internet out here. So I'm not really watching anything right now. I am listening to Bad Women, the Ripper Story Retold on podcast, and I love it. It's a well-researched I don't know, informational piece on the women that were not all prostitutes, like they were, you know, it's their story and how they came to be in that position where they encountered Jack the Ripper and the night they died. I love it. And then what am I reading? I'm reading a trashy romance novel by Nora Roberts. I don't even know the title of it, but I love it. It's great for being snowed in the cabin in the woods. But as far as a book I would recommend that I read all the time and I'm currently reading, The Book of Joy, which is a collaboration between the Dalai Lama and so I can't stop reading it. I just read it over and over and over again.
Awesome. Thank you for the recommendations. I'm always interested to know what people are those three things, the reading, watching, listening to. So thank you for sharing. And thank you for being on the show, Jamie. I appreciate your time. I know you're all like snowed in and everything over there. But I appreciate you taking some time to chat with me. And is there any way that our listeners can follow you? Obviously, your book is probably on Amazon. They could probably find it there. But how else can they, what's the best way to see what you're doing and all that?
The best way to see what I'm doing is at Kickass Teacher on Instagram or kickassteacher.com is my website. And teach until still have time to pee.com. It goes straight to the Amazon bookstore. So you can get it on Kindle. I have a hardback version with journal pages and a paperback version available there.
Oh, nice. Very
Thank
cool.
you.
Very
Yeah.
cool. Thank you, Jamie. I appreciate you taking some time out of your day to chat with me and be on the show.
Lovely to see you. Thank you so much, Elijah. Take care.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. I hope that you can connect with Jamie. I hope you can check out her book, Teach and Still Have Time to Pee, and her website, kickassteacher.com. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you on the next show. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Shut Up and Teach podcast. I hope that you'll check out previous episodes, and I hope that you'll share this with a friend or a colleague.